All right, guys, late week edition of the Weekside Podcast, because as always, there is breaking news in the NFL world. We do not get one day where we are not forced to think about what's going on in the National Football League. And so, as always, joined by Jenny Vrentis. And Jenny was, we're recording this on Thursday night. Jenny just got home from, it was the Conrad Hotel in Manhattan. The Conrad Hotel, where a group of owners got together and voted on their, basically the terms of the CBA, and the ball is now in the players' court. Pretty interesting, not that in the sense that owners were talking about it or lobbying for it, but the fact that, I don't know, I mean, are we on the cusp of a new CBA, Jenny, or do you think that there's some work to be done here?
Yeah, it's interesting. The owners left the meeting. No one stopped to talk. You know, even John Mara, who generally stops to talk, said, you know, I can't say anything. I'm sorry. It seemed like they didn't want to get ahead of themselves. They stuck with the statement the NFL released. It was a pretty brief meeting. It was only 2 hours. I thought it might be longer as they went over these terms, but they were the terms that have been negotiated through the last 10 months between the league and the Players Association. So I think there was clearly familiarity about where they were, and they went over these and not unanimously, but voted to approve the terms. And so now the players must discuss. They have a conference call on Friday, and you need 2/3 of the player reps to approve and more than 50% of all NFL players, the membership across the league. I think it's going to be interesting. I mean, the owners clearly wanted to get this done fast. It was a fast meeting. They just want to move on to the negotiations with the TV contracts that expire in 2021 and 2022. But there's a year left on the CBA. It's not like they have to get it done now. I think there is a sense, because of those TV contracts, that they would like to get it done now and move on to negotiating those. I'm sure the players feel that on some level too, but perhaps they don't have the same urgency as the owners. Or I think the question is now, did they get enough for 17 games, right? So the proposal includes an expansion of the playoffs to add one more team from each conference. So it would be a 14-team playoff field and a 17-game season with 3 instead of 4 preseason games. A slight increase in the percentage that the revenue that the players get. But the big thing there is the 17-game season. I don't know about you, Connor. Like, it feels to me like we got here very quickly. Now, there's been a lot of public comments against the 17-game season, notably Richard Sherman. Leonard Fournette tweeted against it. After the news that the owners passed these terms, Russell Okung tweeted saying that, you know, Roger Goodell was putting a spin on things. So I think when the players convene tomorrow, I think it's fair to expect that a big portion of the conversation will be, are we getting enough for the 17-game season? And should we strike now? Like, is the version of the CBA, the terms that we're discussing now, the best that we think we can get? In other words, if the owners were to get mad that these terms weren't accepted and they couldn't move on to negotiating the TV deals, but they think that's bad for business and that ultimately the TV deals they would get in a year would be worse, and would they revoke some of those terms? I don't know. So I think the calculation has to be, is what we're getting now the best version of what we can get, or should we keep fighting?
I think I was fascinated by the fact that, you know, you're adding a 17th game, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you're not even getting, if you're a top tier player, not even the equivalent of a full game check for an extra week of work, which seems crazy to me.
Right. There's a report from NFL Network that it would be $250,000. And so the issue is that the contracts are negotiated right now for 16 games. So if they were to go to 17 games, I guess the earliest they would do that would be 2021. But you have contracts that extend past 2021. So you'd have to figure out a way to correct that. There's a lot of logistics. And yeah, Connor, I'm a little surprised we haven't seen more pushback. The negotiations have been pretty quiet. Everyone's kind of, it seems like they've moved at a faster pace. Like, this meeting came out of nowhere.
It's funny because, you know, like you said, I mean, I remember the lockout and, you know, basically the preamble leading up to that. And you know, it does seem like a different world from where we were at that time. But it felt like we knew every sort of barb that was flying across the table. We were abreast of kind of every like little moment in the chess match between the players and the owners. This does not feel like that, right? It just feels like, hey, this is what we want, and we think it's a fair deal. And I don't know, it's a different tactic or a different style than I think they adopted in the last one.
Definitely. It's a totally different tone, and I think perhaps because they want to have the labor, you know, situation settled. They would like to have labor peace when they negotiate the TV deals. I think that has added a little bit of, hey, let's just get this done and move on. But the players have to, you know, consider when they talk tomorrow, like, are we okay with where we're at? Obviously, the owners really want to get this done. Do we feel the same way?
Jenny, when we were first starting in newspapers, we were kind of at the cusp of that, the end of the era where you just had to file a story for the newspaper, and then we had to start blogging, and then we had to start doing video. And, you know, I feel like I understand where the players are coming from here. They want us to do an extra week's worth of work for the same amount of pay. I don't know.
Now we're podcasting. I mean, you know, there's no limit to our responsibilities, Connor. And, you know, there's some physical peril that comes with our job as well. You know, sometimes you might, you know, drop a pen on your foot or, you know,
paper cuts.
That's a great one. Earlier today, I scratched my finger while pulling out my podcast equipment.
Ooh.
Yeah.
See? Yeah. So, I mean, you know, players, you know, if you have anything that you'd like to talk about during this negotiation, just get at everyone from the Weak Side Podcast. We understand what you're going through, and you know, we'll be here to help. So, yeah, I think we can. I think we should get into the news topics, and the one thing that I want to get your take on, because I'm very curious. I did not get your thoughts on this when the news broke last night, being Wednesday night, when we first kind of heard that stemming from the CBA, one of the things that the owners proposed and that they want is a seventh team being invited into the playoff field. So 14 teams in the playoffs, essentially 44% of the league would make the postseason. I love it. I feel like I'm in the minority after being destroyed on Twitter all day. What say you?
I hate it. Okay, for a couple reasons. With the new formatting, only one team in each conference would get a first round bye. I hate that. I like the fact that two teams get a first round bye. I think it's the advantage that you're giving the number one seed is so great now. Not only do they have home field advantage, but they also are the only team to get the coveted first round bye. I also think we're letting too many teams into the playoffs. I like the fact that it's more selective in the NFL. I know, like, the joke in hockey, right, is like everyone gets in. And that's what I feel like adding, you know, two more teams will do. And so what if you're like a 9-7 team? Like, you say, well, hey, you know, we're going to keep our coach for another year because we got to the playoffs.
True.
Like, it's a justification for, you know, being like slightly better than average.
The one thing that I didn't like about it was that I feel like there are some owners who are just completely content with being absentee owners, and this rewards mediocrity a little bit, right? I mean, there will be, you know, over the course of the next 10 years, maybe four or five really undeserving teams that are going to make the postseason, and, you know, it'll be a team that, you know, doesn't put a whole lot into the whatever fan experience, spending money on the club or the franchise or the stadium or whatever, football operations, and they're still going to be able to say that they made the playoffs. I do think that's the one thing that sort of rubs me the wrong way, because I don't like rewarding mediocrity in the NFL.
Connor Orr against mediocrity.
but let me tell you why I like it. I think it's good because it makes the end of the season more interesting for the best teams, and no longer will we have the, like, you know, the four best teams in the league just like haughtily sitting back and saying, well, we could rest our players, or maybe we won't rest our players, or, you know, and, you know, it's like, no, you got to go get it. You got to play to the whistle. This is what we tell everybody. And so, yes, in week 17, you got to throw your starters out there and you got to make it work. And the other reason I like it is because I think that as much as it might reward mediocrity, it also does reward maybe a coach who figured out his roster just a little bit later than normal, or a team that sustained a catastrophic injury but was able to sort of recover at the last minute and get back on their feet before the playoffs. I don't know. I think that we could have like a really interesting like a seven seed, like almost like a 2011 Giants or something like that coming into the playoffs and mixing it up with everybody.
God, a seven seed. That sounds so weird. I see your point. Like, you allow for the idea of there being more Cinderellas. I just think the fact that the number one seed is the only team that has a bye, like, hinders that even more, right? Like, you're giving a greater advantage to one team in each conference. And so I feel like that kind of has a conflicting outcome of the idea of adding a 17th team that can contend. I don't know, Connor. I think we're on different sides of this. It's interesting. I mean, it creates more revenue, I guess, you know, and if you are, you know, I don't know, you go through a whole season and it ends abruptly. No one likes that. So you give another team a chance to taste the playoffs. I see some of your arguments, Connor.
I think two of my favorite tweets after the news was announced was, I think that I think it was like the son of Mike Tice, the longtime NFL coach, who tweeted, hey, you know, then we could say that we've made, you know, it was like five of the last six teams that my dad and I worked on would have made the playoffs under this rule or something. Like that.
Oh, that's funny.
Perpetually.
That's good.
And then the other one was that even with the addition of the seventh team, the Oakland Raiders still would have only made the playoffs once in the last, I think it's 17 years. 17 years.
Connor, that's a good one. That's right up your alley. Probably the same with the Browns, too, right? I don't know that it's not like they were ever that close, right?
Yeah. I think, you know, my other thought here is that if you had another season like this year where, like, yes, on the AFC side, are you letting in the Steelers? And is that awful? Yeah, like 100%. Like, I totally agree that Duck Hodges should not be in the playoffs. But on the other side, you know, the NFC was dominant. It was a deeper league, and you maybe left out two teams that could have legitimately made some noise in the playoffs, the Rams and, I don't know, what would you say, the Cowboys? There was a couple teams that just missed the cutoff there that I think would have been interesting in the postseason. So I don't know. I mean, I would have liked to have seen, you know, Sean McVay, they seem to be turning it on at the right time at the end of the year and just kind of lost one too many games there. And I don't know. That would be the one positive for me, that I think that they could have made a little bit of noise in the postseason.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I see some of your points. I still am against it. I'm against the 17 games and I'm against the playoff expansion, I think, Connor.
All right. The next topic, I think, is going to be interesting because it could theoretically be affected by the collective bargaining agreement. Maybe not. But this is another thing I want to get your take on. So we've talked about this. I mean, we talked about this in September. In October, you heard my bad prediction for the Dak Prescott contract 2 weeks ago that Shelby dug out and played for us. But this idea that he should take less money because he's the quarterback of the Cowboys has somehow resurfaced. Now, Emmitt Smith, who did not take less money for being the franchise face of the franchise for the Dallas Cowboys, saying that Dak Prescott should do it. Mm-hmm. What do you make of this? I mean, it's a fascinating negotiation for a lot of reasons. I mean, we're in the middle of the collective bargaining agreement. This is the craziest offseason for quarterback movement in the last 15 or 20 years. And here you have, by some metrics, the best quarterback in football last year, unsigned and in the prime of his athletic career.
Yeah. I mean, the idea that a player should ever take less in this kind of sport where your career could end on any given play at any given second is totally baffling to me. And it's also baffling to me how often the general public sides with billionaire owners. Like, I still, like, it's very hard for me to understand that, right? You know, like, Why is sports the one arena where we would rather see the owners, the people that control the money? You know, why would you side with them rather than the employee?
It's not like the money that Jerry Jones is going to save on Dak Prescott is going to be invested back into the fan experience. You know what I mean? You're not going to pay less than $150 to park at the Star on game day just because Dak Prescott is taking less money. You know what I mean?
And I understand, you know, you think if he takes less money, you can afford more players. You essentially want him to say, hey, I want a good team around me, so I'm going to sacrifice a little bit. But I just, you know, that's not like a direct thing, you know, like maybe you spend on a player who ends up not helping the team at all. Like you can't, it's not a direct calculation to make. So, but you examined this last fall in terms of the Cowboys saying like the off the field market and opportunities are so great when you play for the Star. And, you know, what from that conversation can you apply to this ongoing situation?
I don't know. I think there's two interesting things there. I think that one, it's 100% something that Dallas is pitching to Dak Prescott. I mean, Stephen Jones told me that for the story, you know, that, hey, this is part of our deal. We tell everybody that there's no state income tax down here, so you're saving money there. One agent who has some prominent Cowboy players is like, you know, their whole thing is if you win a Super Bowl here, which is a big if, you're essentially guaranteed a supplemental income for the rest of your life. You know, that players who come down here, sign autographs every home game, and they end up with an extra $100,000 a year or whatever it is. And so there's this idea that if you play ball and you succeed and you do things the right way, that you're setting yourself up for life after football. They have the in their facility, the big wall of broadcasters, and they're more than eager to tell you that it's because they're Dallas Cowboys, you know, Jason Witten and Tony Romo and Troy Aikman and all these guys. And so, you know, I think that it's easy to be caught up in it, but again, I'm with you. I would back any player that wants to get fair market value. And, you know, there's some interesting discussions there. Jalen Smith, Lyle Collins both took below market deals. Jalen Smith, while it wasn't sort of a thing that he got on the back end, now the Cowboys Pro Shop carries his designer eyewear collection, you know, and that's something that he wants to do when he's done with football. And he told me that he views it as a way to build generational wealth. And so you have to be able to kind of see things from both sides of the coin. But it's interesting. They kind of operate in their own little bubble here, and I don't know how many other teams we would be discussing this with, but I think quarterback is just especially a position where it's just got to be removed from the situation. You get the market value, you've earned it, especially if you're someone like Dak Prescott. I think you've earned the market value.
Yeah, and it's like the whole thing about luring you to take less money and help, which would help you build that generational wealth, right? By saying, well, if you win a Super Bowl, then you will get the money that you might have gotten if you just took it up front anyway. Yeah. It's kind of like when players go in free agency and they're, hey, I want to go somewhere where I can win a championship. And it's like, well, unless in the last decade, unless you've gone to the Patriots, you really don't know that anywhere. Like that's, you know, there's no calculation for that. And the same thing with the contract. All you know is what you get in guaranteed money. That's the only thing that's certain in the NFL. The other point I would make that has left my head. Oh, yes, Connor. Back to your original statement about how the negotiations affect this. So if they do, the NFL statement today, which Thursday we're recording this, said if the players do not agree to the terms of this proposal, then they will go into the 2020 league year and complete the final year of the past CBA. And the final year has all these weird rules. And one of them is that you can tag two players. You can franchise tag someone and transition tag someone. If they move ahead with the terms of this new CBA proposal, then you would start year one of that and you would only be able to tag one player, which probably has the biggest impact on the Cowboys compared to other teams because they've got all of these players they have to work out contract situations for, Prescott, Amari Cooper. So that is also a factor in this situation as well.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to be really interesting. I think it's obvious that Dak does get franchised. I would caution that for anybody following breathlessly along with this, if you're a Cowboys fan, to look into both deep history and recent history, that Jerry likes to have a lot of fun with these things, and he doesn't really care about what he says publicly, even though we do. And, you know, he ends up monopolizing it. I mean, back in the 1990s, he ripped Troy Aikman and called him, you know, the greediest player in football. And then when they made him the highest paid player in the league, which they're always going to do, they sold commemorative helmets for that occasion to say, hey, we just paid one player more than we've paid anybody else in the history of the league. And Ezekiel Elliott, isn't that crazy?
That's crazy.
And Ezekiel Elliott, you know, there was the Zeke Who comments, and we all thought, wow, could this be legitimate? Heading for a split. And then what did we see week one at the Dallas Cowboys Pro Shop? Zeke Who t-shirts, which at least the proceeds went to the Salvation Army, so good on the Joneses there. But, you know, I mean, this is a family, a group, a business that has perfected this. They know how to hold your attention and monetize it, so just keep that in mind. I think these things are going to get weird on purpose.
So we've got t-shirts, we've got helmets. What do you think the choice of apparel will be for Dak? I don't know. Socks? God, a quarterback seems more important than socks. I mean, I don't know.
Hear me out on this,
oh,
right?
Oh, no.
Are you ready for this?
Uh-oh.
How about the Dak pack?
And ooh!
It's ooh! And it's a duffel bag full of money, right? You know, you'd put the money in the bag, and it's your Dak pack because it can hold $40 million a season.
Damn. Did you just come up with that, or had you thought of that before the show?
No, it hit me, and I'm a little pissed that I've said it out loud now, right? I mean, now it's in the environment. The Cowboys can just steal this, and I don't make any money off of this.
Yeah, what a moment. Well, we could talk to a lawyer about your legal claim to this idea, Connor.
That's good.
Put that on my list for Friday. Phone a lawyer.
for one of many things.
For one of many reasons. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so this is what we promised you guys we were going to do last week. And just to catch everybody up here, a few weeks ago in The Bachelor, Hannah Ann wrote one of the worst letters. And I felt more bad for her having to feel like she needed to write it than the actual content of the letter. But in order to impress The Bachelor, she wrote a letter of here are the 10 reasons why I love you, you know, and why you should pick me. And so Jenny and I thought that would be a fun thing to do for Tom Brady as he prepares to be wooed, potentially in one location, a la Kevin Durant. Maybe someone, they're all just going to show up to his house and pitch him. And so Jenny has, what team did you end up deciding to take?
I have the Chargers.
You have the Chargers. And I'm going to be John Gruden in the Raiders. So why don't you kick us off here and give us your love letter. But it's not really a letter. It's just your reasons why Tom Brady should come to the Chargers.
So, yeah, you know, I ran out of my yellow legal pad and my pen to draw like hearts with and such. So here's what I did, Connor. I went back and looked at the Durant courtship. You know, they rent this house in the Hamptons. All the teams come to him. And what set the Warriors apart from the other visitors that he had, including the Thunder, right, who had the last opportunity to keep him? And it was that they brought the players with him or with them. So they all came and they met with, and they had a period of time where no one else was there. It was just Durant with the guys he'd be playing with. My proposal for how Brady should do this is, well, I guess this isn't really the prompt, Connor, but I'm just going to put this out there that he should just have everyone come to his home in Montana. For a lot about the home in Montana, Peter King recorded a podcast there after the Falcons Super Bowl. And, you know, I've heard a lot about the home in Montana as a result of that. And I think that's the most efficient way to get this done, especially because we've got this March 18th deadline where the Patriots have to essentially know by then. So the fastest way to do this, rather than having him take flights all over the country, would be to have it at his home, right? Okay, so let's work off of that premise. So if you're the Chargers, take Dean Spanos' jet, load it up at the airport in Orange County, and you've bring his teammates, you know, you bring Keenan Allen, you bring Hunter Henry, you bring them to Tom. And then in terms of the things you're offering Tom, I think you really play up the parent card and, you know, mom and dad mean a lot to Tom. He is now in California. They're in a different part of California, easy enough to go. But you present the idea that you've got this suite that during the week is, you know, because you had the suite in Gillette Stadium, right? So you've got to at least match that. So you've got to make sure that you can secure this in the new stadium that the Rams have built that you are now going to be occupying. Make sure he's got a suite during the week. Alex Guerrero can, well, no, that probably doesn't work because you're not practicing at the stadium. My pitch is really falling through here. I'm going to have to rethink that. But on the weekend, it's really for, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Brady. And, you know, it's their suite, Connor.
I think that's super strong. And if I were John Gruden, which I'm pretending to be right now, it's making me nervous because...
Okay, right. But I got one more thing.
Okay, let me hear this.
The last thing is a person, a body person for Brady to make sure that none of his equipment is ever stolen again. So you could say when you played for the Patriots, your jersey was stolen and it required an international investigation. We are going to have a body person to make sure that all of your game-worn equipment is never stolen again.
I love that. That's perfect.
You sound like a bachelor now. I love that.
I love that.
So this is my pitch to Brady. Yeah, you have him hang out with the targets that he'll be throwing to. You tell him that they're better than any other collection of targets on any team that he could go to.
Which really, is true, probably.
Which is true, I think, right? You sell the parents, and then you've got this body person for the game-worn equipment, which if it's Brady's, you know, well, you don't want to talk about this being his last season, but, you know, just want to make sure that everything is secure.
This is, this is formidable. And it's, you know what? It's like, it's the difference between, like, I'm Gruden and I'm coming in and I bought the expensive gift, but you were the Chargers and you got the gift where you had to think about it, you know? And
yeah, no, I don't know. I don't think so, Connor. I don't think my pitch is that great.
All right. So,
also, I have to say really quickly, if I'm the Chargers, I'm not sure I want to go down this path, right?
I would not.
I think if you're in a position that the Chargers are in, I think maybe you start over. Like, I think there's a lot of appeal in that. Like, obviously, from the ownership perspective, and you're going into a new stadium, and you want Brady to draw fans. But I think from a football perspective, there's a lot of value in starting over. Tyrod Taylor can be your bridge guy. You draft someone you like. You're in position to draft someone you like. I don't know, Connor. I think that's the direction I would go.
I think if Anthony Lynn had more time with Tyrod Taylor in Buffalo, we'd be thinking a lot differently about Tyrod Taylor as a quarterback as well.
I think that's fair. Yeah, there was a lot of scrutiny about his comments about Taylor, but all he was saying was like, hey, I think we can win with this guy, right? You know, he takes care of the football. He has some mobility that will help if we have line issues, which was objectively a problem last year with Rivers, right? You know, once there were injuries on the offensive line, he couldn't move around. And so I think if you talk about, if you're considering, Brady gets the ball out fast. He's, you know, it's not the same calculation. Like, the only thing he and Rivers really have in common is that they're both older quarterbacks. So it's not the same thing. But I just think, you know, you don't want to get into a spot where you bring him in to sell tickets and then you realize midway through the season that this is the year that it's, you know, you've seen some of the accuracy issues or something's come up, and you don't want to midway through the year realize, hey, this is the year that we've gone over the cliff, which is essentially, I think, watching from afar, what you could say happened with Rivers last year.
No doubt. Yeah. And that would scare me vice versa, too. If I'm Brady, I would look at my options and I would see offensive line is a huge check mark for me. And I don't know if I exactly... You know, that's something that's going to be hard for them to overcome if they are interested in aggressively pitching him, I think.
All right, Connor. Ball's in your court.
Okay, scene at a vacant room in the new fancy Raiders stadium.
Oh, you're making him come to Vegas. Oh, shit, I'm already, like, I'm way ahead of you. I'm in Montana in his living room. I'm live. Okay, go ahead, Connor, sorry.
And so, all of a sudden you pull back the curtains, and this is the NFL's first totally sustainably organic vending and dining area, exclusively built around the TB12 diet. So they're going to sell this stuff to fans during the games. The breaded. There's actually one thing. I have the book. I have the TB12 diet book, and there was like two or three things in that looked actually really good. There was like a breaded, like kale fritter or something like that, you know.
But and breaded so, with like what, like almond flour or something?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And it looked good.
That's how my mom makes green beans for me. Ooh. Gluten-free breaded green beans with almond flour. Go ahead. Sorry.
And so your pitch is that this is, you know, the cornerstone of your brand. And then, you know, so I want you to just keep that in mind, but we're going to keep walking down the hall. And then you go into a second adjoining room, and it is a replica of the old set of John Gruden's QB camp from ESPN. And he's going to sit down, and he's going to just say the nicest things about Tom for an hour while highlights of Tom Brady play. And it's going to be the full Gruden experience. It's going to be this guy can do it all. This guy can throw deep. He can throw over the middle. He can bat, bat, bat. You know, this is going to be the whole Gruden experience, because what you're doing is you're giving him the one thing that Bill Belichick has never given him. And arguably the thing that's made Tom Brady a great player. However, maybe not what he wants at this time. He wants to hear that he is the best. John Gruden is good at telling people how good they are on television. And I think that he makes this memorable magic moment for Brady in the stadium next to the organic restaurant that's going to bear his name on Sundays. And you leave with a 2-year, $70 million contract signed.
All right. That's good, Connor. That's good. I like your pitch as well.
What do you think? And I would say that, you know, and part of that, and I think what any team is going to have to do is say, hey, give me a list like of two or three guys and we'll do it. You know, wide receivers, whatever it is, tight ends. I mean, who do we need to get for you to make this work?
What happens when sales on the almond flour breaded kale lag during the year, Connor?
It's tough too, because it's harder to repurpose. You know what I mean? You can't just a homemade fritter does not keep well. You know what I mean?
Well, I guess it's not a huge concern. You've already locked him in for 2 years. So if sales are bad, like, oh, well, you've already spent the money. So
you just feed it to everybody, and then everybody's super happy and healthy with the, you know, because think about the old Raiders in Oakland. That was like the worst, notoriously the worst cafeteria in football. There were players that I remember that would sign there in free agency and openly complain about it. So at least this is a little improvement, even a little Tom Brady leftovers from Sunday. That'll be better than whatever they were going to serve anyway.
Yeah, before Jack Del Rio got there, they didn't even have a cafeteria. They had like food like brought in from the outside. Like they didn't have anywhere to like cook on site. It's pretty crazy.
Jeez.
All right. So do you think that any of these pitches would really work?
I think that your pitch, which avoids him traveling to me, is a big thing if I'm super famous. And I did not take that into account, how super famous people like to be catered to. And I think that that's a big one. But I think he wants like a little bit of a show. Mm-hmm. You know, I think he wants a little flair, because he's spent 20 years with no flair.
What if Bill gives him a little bit of that? Like, you know how like Bill would kind of change some of the ways he approached things, like with Gronk or whatever, because he like loved Gronk so much, and like things that would like annoy him about other players he kind of just let happen with Gronk. What if he like just does that with Tom for a year?
I would, like, you know, after all the pitches are done and then Tom goes to Foxborough to clean out his locker, and Bill just puts his arm around him and says, you know, I've always loved you, you know, and then it changes the course of the next 2 years of the NFL, you know. What if that happened?
And then you have Bill walk in, and you know, Tom says, you had me at hello. I don't know. We're really rolling here, Connor. Really just spitballing. A lot of things going on.
That's okay. That's exactly what the Weak Side podcast is for. But I do have one more question for you before we get to our later segments, and that you and I will both be traveling to the Combine on Monday, the NFL's annual trade show in Indianapolis. For how much longer? I don't know, But what are you looking forward to this week in Indianapolis?
Okay, I saw something on the Bengals website recently that was really eyebrow-raising, Connor. Because, you know, there's all this been all of this speculation about Burrow. Not really sure where it comes from, but, like, you know, will he ask out of Cincinnati? Even though he hasn't, hasn't said anything to lead us to believe that he would pull an Eli Manning, right? But there's been a lot of breathless speculation about this. And then I see this article 2 days ago on the Cincinnati Bengals website, how Joe Burrow positively transformed the entire Athens, Ohio community with his speech at the Heisman ceremony, which was remarkable, right? Like, that was a great moment. And I read all of the stories afterward about how much it had helped them fight hunger in his home community. But I just thought it was interesting timing. Like, the Bengals have got this big feature on their website about Joe Burrow, like, before the Combine, where everyone's going to speculate if he's going to, like, force his way out of Cincinnati.
It's like a hello, you know.
Right?
It would be okay, so, amazing if team websites ended up just becoming, like, this arm of, like, subterfuge, you know? I would love
yes,
that.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So if you click on the story, it says the roots and rising of Joe Burrow. So I don't know. There's going to be a lot of Burrow talk next week. Maybe you'll write about it, Connor. And my other one is I kind of love the idea that teams and coaches are kind of like undercutting the importance of the Combine, right? We saw like the Broncos said their assistant coaches aren't going, that their time would be better served watching film. I think the Rams aren't sending the coordinators. Just so that John Harbaugh won't be there. He had some kind of off-season surgery. But basically the idea that like this is not this all-important thing, I kind of love it. And it's also like kind of like a little like salvo back at the NFL, because they've like no team, no person who works for a team wanted this change to the Combine format, moving all the workouts to primetime. Everyone was belly aching about it. And so I kind of love the idea that like they're just sending less people. And they're like, you know what? We've heard this for years, right, Connor? Like scouts grumble, like I can go back and all these workouts are just uploaded. I can watch them at home on my iPad. I'm not even in the formal interviews. You know, maybe they might do the informal interviews at the train station. Everyone says the medical and the formal interviews are the most important part. Okay, great. But, you know, the medical, like you don't necessarily have, like you get those, that information from the doctors, and then the formal interview, really there's only like three people in the room that interact with the player, and that so that it really matters. So I don't know, I just kind of like the idea that they're like, you know, in a year when the NFL is saying like, hey, we've moved this into prime time, we're making it into its own event, NFL coaches are like, yeah, it's not that big a deal, like we're not even sending our whole staff.
Sooner rather than later, it's just going to be Dave Gettleman there, because he's going to be the last person to believe that you need to see it in person, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. You've got to watch the weigh-ins in person.
I totally agree with that. I think that Indianapolis has been a gracious host, and I'm sorry that, you know, it feels like they're eventually going to lose this. You know, when it's going to be a budget saving thing, I think, for the NFL to just pack everything up and move it to LA when they have that whole centralized deal out there. But man, I mean, the only bad things can happen at the Combine, really. You know, if you're a top prospect, if you're a coach with a coaching staff, like there's just no more good or positive things that can happen there. You know, player could get hurt during the drills, a player could trip during the drills, a player could stumble during the interviews when you're shouting weird things at him. You know, your coaches could be out at night networking for other jobs. You know, I don't know. I mean, I just don't think that there's anything good about going anymore. And I do love the fact that like some people are slowly starting to pull away. I think that's great.
We could follow the trend as well, Connor.
Yeah.
Maybe in a future year.
We could just cover the Combine from, oh, I don't know, a bar in Key Biscayne somewhere, you know?
Yeah. Okay, so what are you looking forward to, Connor?
Well, I agree that I think that seeing how Burrow's camp decides to spin this, because in the Bengals too, right? Because we saw last year, just remember how bizarre the Cardinals' whole approach to the combine was, and the fact that they made it seem like they essentially just nuked their leverage over the course of 45 minutes of talking at the combine. And if you're the Bengals, you know, this is really a green head coach in Zach Taylor, doesn't have a lot of experience with this, and you're going to need some grade A, you know, subterfuge up your sleeve right now to handle this. And as well with Burrow, I mean, you know, does he come out and realize that he doesn't have the leverage that Eli Manning did, and just, you know, swallow his pride and accept it and say, hey, I'm going to go to this franchise and make the best of it? Or do you double down on it? Because I don't know. I mean, maybe you need to create the idea that you do have as much leverage as some of these other quarterbacks, because that's the one thing I don't think a lot of people are talking about, is Eli Manning would have gone, could have gone anywhere. But there were other quarterbacks, I think, that the Chargers liked close to as much. And so, you know, there was a very neat thing that worked out there. John Elway had the idea of baseball. I mean, I don't know what Joe Burrow's backup plan here is, you know, if he ends up kind of misplaying this a little bit.
Well, what do you think of the speculation thus far?
I think it's, you know, I don't understand why you would do it as early. I don't know. Does it feel too early to be planting the seed, or maybe is it the perfect time to be planting the seed right now that, hey, I really wish you guys wouldn't take me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know the right time for that either.
But I do think that, you know, more than anything, he's going to have to nail the public performance in this, I think, right? And I think his camp is going to have to do a great job of drumming up the narrative throughout the week. I mean, I think that there was certainly some success in that way for Kyler Murray, for a couple of these guys over the past few years, where they kind of felt like maybe they came out of it either winning or losing that week. And I don't know. So I'm interested to see what Joe does here. This is going to be a lot for a player that wasn't even on anybody's radar as a first round pick a year ago, and is now trying to potentially, you know, alter the course of the entire draft.
Yeah, he's got to do a lot more interview prep, perhaps. Then, I mean, basically, you can just default to the whole, hey, I'll be happy to play anywhere. That's all I meant. I have no idea where I'm going to go. If it's the Bengals, I'd be happy to play for the Bengals. You know, if they don't choose me, I'd be happy to, you know, I think you just kind of have to do that to leave all your options open. Although, yeah, I don't know, maybe it's good to plant the seed early. You know, listen, I went to my dermatologist this morning, and there's this big sign that said, Botox is better when you start early. And I was like, is my dermatologist encouraging patients to get Botox? Maybe I should find a new dermatologist. So just really, it was like, you see the greatest impact with the least amount of Botox if you start early, apparently, Connor. I mean, I'm pretty anti-Botox, but so I'm just saying, you know, maybe you see a bigger impact if you start the process early.
Be a stunning revelation if we found out that Joe Burrow was taking Botox this entire time. That would be the perfect combine story, right? The Bengals want to fire back at this guy who's sinking their perception as an organization. It's like, oh yeah, well, you know, hey, this guy, you know, takes a little Botox. Isn't that a little weird? I don't know. But anyway, let's dovetail into the Oracle, the Ventus Consensus, and then I'm going to ask you for your we're going to miss a bachelor, right, when we're at the combine, right?
We're going to miss it, yeah. So I don't know, Connor.
I might ask you for a bold prediction here coming up, or maybe a finalist or something there, but I would say that my Oracle prediction for this week for the combine is that there will be no, like, I think, piggybacking off of your point, we're also done with this idea of the combine riser. You know, I think that is an antiquated sentiment. You know, someone will run fast, but I think that I'm going to give fans a lot of credit too. I think we're smart enough now to realize that straight line speed and bench press are not really anything that we should be paying attention to anymore.
That's good, Connor. It's for a thinking. It's a thinking man's oracle, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Not as bold. It won't make Shelby's year-end list of lowlights, But
we're already looking ahead to that for the next year.
But what is your Frentis consensus? Something that we can all walk into Indianapolis and agree on. I will say that my org consensus is that St. Elmo's is excellent. Everyone talks about this fabled steakhouse in Indianapolis, but my favorite restaurant serves pizza there. So I think the consensus could be that not everybody is going to have a great St. Elmo's meal, as you're led to believe.
Elmo's is definitely overrated. The steaks are not that good. I mean, the shrimp cocktail, because it's like very hot, is an experience, but the steaks are not that good at Elmo's. I would agree with this, Connor. My Virgis consensus is back to what we opened the show with. I just think that 17 games, the change to 17 games, is worth more than what the players are getting back. You know, there's the reduction to 3 preseason games. You know, I heard there's also going to be roster expansion, so 2 more practice squad slots and 2 more active roster slots, along with increased minimum salaries. And they say they'll do other things to alter the structure of the season, a longer transition into training camp, like a longer acclimation period, fewer padded practices and fewer joint practices, since those have higher concussion rates during camp. My thing is, those things I think should be in the CBA anyway. Like, I think the 2011 CBA did a lot in terms of changing working conditions, you know, making sure that players couldn't do football, their clubs couldn't ask players to do football activities for a certain amount of time, and then limiting those activities, limiting contact in practice through the season. I think those were all important things. We can't say that what was agreed to 10 years ago still applies. So all of those concessions to changing the format of the season to offset the 17th game, they don't offset it. That is worth more than those changes. And those changes, I believe, should have been made in this agreement anyway. And so, and you know, better health benefits, all of those things, like, the NFL can't do enough in that area, right? Because the game is so risky and we see so many long-term consequences. So I don't know what the players are going to do tomorrow. But I think this jump to 17 games is a lot more significant than we're talking about. And I think it's worth more than a couple changes to the schedule and, you know, a 1 or 1.5% increase in revenue when you're still under 50%.
I don't know what they're going to do tomorrow, but they should be listening to the Weak Side podcast, you know, on their way there, on their phone, radio.com, Stitcher, you know, whatever, however players get their podcasts. I do think that they should be tuning in. I think that's important. We're going to miss it. My guess is some sort of explosive revelatory episode of The Bachelor. So maybe I'll ask you, we'll do the same thing. We kind of did our free agent matches, and we'll do that again after the combine. So give me your winner. We're three weeks out, because they're going to throw in one of those like episodes where they just recap the entire season too, right? So we're like, what, 2 or 3 weeks out from knowing who he's actually going to pick?
Yeah, usually there's a women tell all. They've changed the formatting a little bit the last year, so I'm not exactly sure which week we'll find out. But
like the combine.
Oh, wow, Connor. Yeah, just really trying to maximize your audience and drag it out as long as possible. I think that, okay, my prediction is the final two are going to be Hannah Ann and Madison. And that I think Madison should leave. I respect the fact that she's committed to her principles. And because of that, I don't think they're a great match. You know, his answer when she asked about faith was like, well, I can try to be stronger in my faith for you, which everyone makes their own personal choice on these matters. And if they're not really aligned, then I don't know that it makes sense. They just seem too far apart in terms of a lot of things that are really important in relationships. So I think everyone should just end up single. I mean,
that's
what I think should happen.
This does feel like that kind of season. I agree. My prediction is that the winner is off the board. I think it's a person that is not among the active contestants right now. I think this is going to be stunning, because they're going to need to do something to save what has been a wet cereal season, you know, just crunchless, you know, really nothing to sink your teeth into. And so I think that they're going to really need to wallop us with something, blindside us in the finale. And my Madison take is that, I think I texted you this during the episode a few weeks ago, is that I think she was a sleeper agent all along. I think this was Mike Pence going to the Colts game when he knew that Colin Kaepernick was going to kneel so he could stage the walkout. I think this was she knew Peter's reputation, and so she was going to get to the finals and in the biggest stage espouse her beliefs on the subject and then walk away and leave as the entrenched sort of champion of her cause. So
I could see her as the next Bachelorette. You know, there were some reports that there was some filming going on in Auburn and just kind of made too much sense, Connor. So, but yeah, they've really been teasing this as an ending that we've never seen before. But I just want to say for our listeners, since, you know, it's you and I that they hear every week, I just really connected to the moment when Peter was telling Hannah Ann's father that he was going to tell her that he was falling in love with her. And the father looked at him and goes, right, right. And that is just like, I was taken back to the moment where you presented this digitized, pixelated camo hat that you bought at Georgia Tech and asked me what I thought. And I think that was exactly my face in that moment. Yeah, I just wanted to say that I could picture myself in that moment, but not a conversation like this, just looking at a pixelated Georgia Tech camo hat, Connor.
I would say that Peter is the pixelated camo hat of Bachelor contestants, so it all ties in, but thank you guys for listening. We will check in live from Indianapolis early next week. So we're going to we'll fly all of our equipment there, all that good stuff. So, that was fun.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. The MMQB Weekside Podcast is me, Jenny Vrentis, and Connor Orr. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Moravec is emeritus executive director of the MMQB. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.